Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Ha ha! Just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Today's episode of the About Last Night podcast is brought to you by CBDMD. CBD oil, baby! Look, do you need some more energy in your life? Do you need mental clarity? Do you want to sleep like a fucking baby Jesus and wake up refreshed? Without that groggy THC hangover of marijuana? Nobody's got time for that shit. It's time to start fucking with the best CBD oil in the business, and that is CBDMD, the leader in premium CBD oil products. What do you get with these guys? Well, you get CBD that's sourced from organic, non-GMO, vegan hemp plants grown right here in the USA, baby. And all the products are THC-free. What does that mean? That means absolutely no high. They independently test all their shit to ensure each batch contains only high-quality, natural ingredients. Not only are their prices the best per milligram in the industry, but all their CBD is extracted using broad-spectrum extraction, which combines CBD oil with additional terpenes, amino acids, and other cannabinoids for added benefits. Their customer support is the shit. They're reliable, around the clock, and they're just smart-ass people that are always available to answer your questions, and you might have some. Like, hey, is the shipping free? Fuck yeah, it is on all U.S. orders, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to start sleeping better, have more energy, and have your brain work at its top capacity, go to CBDMD.com and use promo code LASTNIGHT20 for 20% off your first purchase. CBDMD.com/aboutlastnight, promo code LASTNIGHT20, and get 20% off that first order. CBDMD is powered by nature, enhanced by science, and we all know science doesn't lie, baby. All science wants to do is tell the truth to make you feel good. We'll start feeling good with CBDMD. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Welcome back to the About Last Night podcast. Adam Ray here. Hope you guys had a killer weekend. Today's episode, boy, it's one of those eps that I could not wait for the weekend to end so that we could post today. Our guest is Marcellus Wiley. You know him from Sports Nation. So many talk shows on ESPN. He played for the Buffalo Bills. He's got a new show on Fox Sports right now called Speak for Yourself with Jason Whitlock on Fox Sports 1. And he has a new book out, which we talked about a lot, called Never Shut Up. Marcellus is one of those just naturally charismatic, funny, articulate dudes that you will ever meet. We talk about his days playing for the Bills, being in the NFL, making that jump from college, avoiding the gang life in South Central where he grew up, balancing work and home life, and his new show, Speak for Yourself, on Fox Sports 1. And again, his new book, Never Shut Up, which you can get on BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon. And he did the audio for it, which he talks about being a fucking adventure and a half. It's just a great episode. If you like sports, you're going to love this episode. But even if you don't, man, Marcellus is one of those cool cats that can just talk about anything for as long as you want. So follow Marcellus on Twitter and Instagram at Marcellus Wiley. He posts a lot of hilarious shit. And get his book again, Never Shut Up, and watch his show, Speak for Yourself, on Fox Sports 1. Follow me at Adam Ray Comedy, Brad at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast, aboutlastnightpodcast.com for past and present episodes and ALN merch. Shop AdamRay.com for all your Adam Ray merch. I just got beanies and pins. That shit is up. Go to AdamRayComedy.com and get your Adam Ray merch. Tour dates, we've got a ton coming up, but none bigger than this weekend. Oh shit. February 14th, 8 p.m., Comedy Zone in Charlotte, North Carolina. One night only, February 14th, Valentine's Day. Come on, go out, get some comedy in your life on the biggest date night of the year. February 14th, 8 p.m., Comedy Zone, Charlotte, North Carolina. And then February 16th, Brad and I are doing a live About Last Night podcast at the Comedy Zone, 3 p.m. on Saturday, February 16th. Tickets for both of those shows at AdamRayComedy.com. Guest to be announced. We will be finding our guest at the NBA Celebrity All-Star Weekend, which, oh yeah, you might have seen a couple posts from Brad and I, but we're playing in that shit. We're playing in the, not the All-Star Game, obviously. We're playing in the Celebrity All-Star Game on Friday, February 15th at 7 p.m. on ESPN. It's a crazy story how it happened. I will get into it later, but Adam Silver's the man, and he put Brad and I in the Celebrity All-Star Game, and I can't fucking wait. Sue Bird is my coach. Brad and I's coach. Ray Allen is on our team. J.B. Smooth is playing. Nick Cannon, Dr. Oz, Daughtry, Quavo. It's going to be insane. Brad and I have a few surprises and tricks up our sleeves, as well as a few promo videos we will be posting on Instagram. First one comes out tomorrow night. So make sure you are following us on Instagram to see all that fun. And of course, we'll be posting so much from the All-Star Weekend. We get to go to like a Legends breakfast on Sunday, which no doubt is going to have everybody. Brad already has decided what he's going to say to Jordan when and if we meet him, which we definitely will because he owns the Hornets, so he will be there in Charlotte. But Brad's going to say, you know, Mike, we have a lot in common. I was also cut from my high school team, which obviously will go over well. And then we'll get a picture, hopefully. So anyway, tune into that. February 15th, Celebrity All-Star Game, ESPN, 7 p.m. And then the following weekend, February 21st to the 23rd, I will be at Comedy Works downtown in Denver, Colorado. This is my first time headlining this club, so please come out, all you ALN fans. Denver Comedy Works downtown, February 21st through the 23rd. In Denver, Colorado. And then the following weekend, February 27th through March 2nd, I'll be at one of my favorite clubs on planet Earth, The Punchline in San Francisco, February 27th through March 2nd. Tickets at adamraycomedy.com. Brad Williams, February 22nd and 23rd is in Alaska at the Blue Loon in Fairbanks, Alaska. Get your tickets at bradwilliamscomedy.com. So many great apps coming up. Pete Holmes, Ron Funches, Brian Friedman, Dane Cook, Craig Ferguson. So make sure you're subscribed on iTunes. Email us at aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com. We're going to read some fan mail coming up in the next few weeks. Give you guys a chance to win some free merch. And rate and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, all right? Tweet at us and let us know what episode you liked, what you loved, where you listened to it. And again, comment on the iTunes page. 5-star rating helps us climb the charts. We appreciate the love. Speaking of love, shout out to our girl Michelle Beadle, 2-time ALN guest, for making this Marcellus intro when I did Sports Nation back in the day. Back in the day, it was like a fucking year ago. But Michelle, we love you. Thanks for being so dope. Now that we've got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Marcellus Wiley.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. It's about last night.
Forgot going across LA is no matter what time of day.
Oh yeah,
I was like, damn.
It is something that you never get used to.
No, you don't.
You never. It's like I've talked to morning radio show DJs. They're like, hey, when do you get used to the waking up at 3:30 in the morning? They're like, oh, never.
Never, right?
Like, and it's like you never get used to the traffic.
Yeah,
there's something in your brain that just goes, I should not be leaving an hour and a half to drive 3 miles.
Exactly.
I shouldn't do it. And then turns out.
Yeah, but something silenced that criticism. It's usually like an 80-degree day in January, and you're like, fuck. Just got to do it, brother.
Yeah.
Just got to do it.
Well, so you grew up in Compton.
Yeah. I'm born in Compton up to age 5, and then I'm there every weekend, but weekdays. My family was into greener pastures.
Yeah.
So grandma moved from Watts to Compton because it was a better life.
Is it?
Wow.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Watts riot, never heard of the Compton riots back in the 60s. So, yeah. And so she moved for that and then raised my mother and family there. And then my mother, when she was of age, moved us to South Central for
once
a better life.
Upgrade.
Upgrade, right?
And then, man.
Everything hit the fan. So.
And then you moved to North Korea.
right.
For a better life.
We're Bogota in between. But yeah, we went there too.
Wait, now, Brad and I both went to SC. And him from Orange County, me from Seattle. And the first thing that like a lot of people were saying to me was like, oh, SC, huh? So you're going to live in Watts?
Yeah.
And I was like, I think it's close. It's not in it. And also I'm like, is it that?
Right.
But like, and look, my senior apartment was in like a kind of like a little for it. For sure.
Yeah.
our first night, my buddies and I were sitting on the patio smoking blunts, and we're just like, you know, like, man, it's senior year. Then we're like, off, then we're going to be movie stars, and this is great. And yeah. this neighborhood, and we're like, we got a little place. We're not in the dorms anymore. And literally, like, four cop cars, five ambulances, and a fire truck pull up to the place across the street from us. And we're all just like mid-puff, just like, where the yeah. fuck did we just move to?
Right, exactly.
But like, and it was never, that was like a one-off of like a crazy night, and nothing was ever too sketchy, but it was, everyone always said like, yeah, don't go a couple blocks further that way.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know what, like Columbia is in Harlem, but they want to call it Morningside Heights, you know, so for the kids who are coming from those protected places, you don't want to say you're going to Harlem, but you know, a lot has changed. It's weird. You're protected, obviously, in the bubble of being on a campus. A lot of campuses, a lot of stadiums are in bad neighborhoods. Cheaper land, for one. Oh, so, you know, they always do that. And then they heighten the security force, and you don't notice it, but they are making sure you're protected, even though you're right there sandwiched between the hood.
How do you think the Rams stadium is going to fare down there? It's going to crush, right?
Chargers and Rams stadium.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
You better respect
my bad, dude. Guess what? I'm more of a Chargers fan than I'm a Rams fan, obviously, because of the divisional shit with my Hawks. But were you fired up, first of all, just to piggyback on the Chargers thing, but like when they came up here, was that?
That was huge.
Yeah.
I supported it.
Yeah.
I understand what sports is, and I don't think a lot of people get it. One, it's not life. It's a means to an end.
Whoa.
It's not. I don't want to hear that shit. People always
listen,
like,
man. I want my players taking pay cuts to stay with their teams.
Tom Brady, huh?
Yeah, they got to do what. It's like everyone expects people to be Tom Brady and take cuts for the team. It's like, well, not everyone's married to Giselle, who's making $50 million a year.
Exactly.
Like more.
And ask him how that pay cut went when he wanted to take the pay cut, took the pay cut. Then he said, "That's for Wes Welker," and they said, "We're not paying Wes Welker." And then they didn't give him the money back. Like, but wow. You know. You got to weigh the balance because he also has 5 going on 6 rings, maybe. So,
everything
has an opportunity cost.
But do you think L.A. Can house 2 teams?
Absolutely, man. You know, I mean, first of all, we have the population. Do we have the interest? Does it have the entertainment product and value? Yeah. I think the Lakers showed what L.A. is best at. It's this duality, Showtime Lakers, you know, and they tried to go Showtime 2.0 now. Mm-hmm. Basically, you have to be great on the field, on the court, but you also got to entertain people, man.
Be flashy.
More than the wins and losses.
You got to have something. And I feel like McVay is doing that for the Rams. He's this young, good-looking, smart dude. And then you got a guy like Gurley that's like, that's the star we can kind of hang our hat on.
Right.
Who's funny and stuff like that. But, yeah, you need – it's not just the X's and O's. It's not just being good.
No, like, I mean, ask the San Antonio Spurs about that. Like, even though, you know, shout out to Beetle. Everybody knows they're great, but who's tuning in for that? You know what I mean? It's just like, enough.
I'd rather watch Bob Ross paint for... Yeah, I'd rather watch Bob Ross paint the game that the Spurs were playing at that time than the Spurs play.
Yeah.
Again, shout out, love you, Michelle. Mm-hmm. But it's just
give
too.
Tim Duncan a happy little head.
Just gonna give Sean Elliott just some fun little fingers here.
So good.
Wait. So okay. So then, when did you go to? When did sports become like a part of your life? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. At age 7, I was really good in class. Like, I was just one of those eager learners from day one, just sit in the front.
Hand up first, right?
Hand up first. Yeah. I'm a nerd, dude. Like, don't let none of this fool you in size and accolade.
Valedictorian of your high school?
They say that, but I wasn't. And I let them run with it, but I'm like, hell no.
I won't correct you.
Yeah, you're right. I was like top 5, but I wasn't one.
Still impressive.
I mean, if you factor in the athletics as like a handicap, I think that puts you at valedictorian.
Damn right. With my schedule, I was one. That's why I don't correct too many people.
Exactly.
Did you like school? Is that?
I just did, man. I liked it because we had to be there. I remember my first logical step of why I wanted to be a great student. I started to add up my time. I was like, okay, so I'm at school from 8 to 3. Okay, that's 7 hours. But then I have to get up at like 7. This is elementary school.
Yeah.
I gotta get up at 7. I gotta walk to school. And then after that, I'm hanging out till I don't get home to 4. So that's 2 more hours. Okay, that's 9 hours. Then I'm going to practice. And practice is 2-3 hours max. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait a minute. I'm spending 3 times as much time somewhere that I'm supposed to hate and not care about and not pay attention. I was like, hell no. So all my friends were caught up in being cool. Same old stuff. Clothes you're wearing, what shoes you got.
Which everyone's got a little piece of that, but you don't want it to consume you, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, my friends were caught up in starter jackets at the time. That was the thing. Yeah, what team you got?
So good.
Right? Everybody was all in.
So my mom threw away my Supersonics one when we moved, and I still have not forgiven her.
Oh, damn.
Come on, man. It's a collector's item now.
That is a collector's item.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I had a Raiders one. My sister had a white Raiders. I had the black Raiders.
Yeah.
I lost mine. Maybe it may have got jacked and didn't even notice. Somebody just took it from me. But yeah, I was just caught up in different things and then always had the responsibility of, look, I knew what the hood was. Mm-hmm. I knew we were broke. I knew we didn't have a lot of people in our family who lived out their dreams and desires, but were just workers. And, you know, happy people, but, you know, light company, phone company, postal employees, like, no one at nine is drawing that up. But then if that's your reality, you got to make the best of it.
Yeah.
So you, when you're intimate with that, it can sound judgmental, but you start to realize, oh, that's why you're on the edge. Oh, that's why you drink a lot. Oh, that's why you're not always supportive. Like, they didn't live their life to the fullest.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
I started to say, wait a minute, I got to look at what I have. And I didn't have much. I'm not a tremendous athlete. I'm just big and I can run. So people mistake that as, oh, you're an athlete. No, I can't play basketball for damn. Oh, really? I'm horrible.
Oh, shit.
Don't make me go sideways. No, I'm not. I'm going straight ahead.
Not a lateral move.
Not a lateral move.
No.
So I was really good in football, just the speed and just the power, and I'm not scared of anything.
Yeah.
And I was good in track. And I just said, look, that's my athletic gifts. Let's harness those. Let's make the most of it. And then my academics, just because I liked school and I knew I was going to be there more than anything else.
Now, I would think that with a guy like at your size that you talk about growing up in certain neighborhoods, did gangs try to recruit you?
You know, it was a weird experience. I had uncles who were gang members. And so that's the 70s and late 70s. I remember going to my first funeral. My uncle got killed. Supposedly they cut his brake line, some other gangsters cut his brake line in his car, his truck, and he just couldn't stop on the freeway. So he so one of those. And then I went to another funeral shortly thereafter, another uncle. I didn't know they were Crips. I really didn't. I mean, my uncle's now looking at pictures, blue curlers in their hair, big old perms, just blue cutlasses. It's all gang shit. And I didn't know. I'm six. I'm five. I'm seven.
That's
just like.
Just your uncle.
Just my uncle.
Yeah.
But then my uncle was, all of them were the man in the streets. They go outside, everybody bowing down, everybody respecting their cars, their life. But I saw them in the house. And I saw the tears. I saw the frustration. I saw the anger. And I was like, damn. How are you the man out there and you're not happy in here like that, you know? And so for me,
at six, you're taking this in.
I'm taking it in and not knowing how to compute it. I'm just like taking input, like just bring it in.
Yeah.
And then when you get to that age, when you start to get recruited or mess with, it's not enticing. It's just, you know, the facade, you know, it's like.
So you saw the life.
Yeah, I saw it for behind the veil. Yeah. Like, I didn't see gang banging through movies and through music. I saw it like, no, this shit will kill you. I've been to too many funerals before the age of 10. And I also realized from my family that they didn't want to necessarily be a part of this world. Everyone was just trying to make do with what they had. Everyone was trying to do the best. So I'm on welfare, food stamps, all this stuff. And I'm just like, wait a minute. And the gangs start coming to me. Mm-hmm. And I realized that that's just a death trap, man. That's a one-way ticket to hell.
That's really mature of you to have those thoughts, because a lot of people look at the gang as like, oh, wait, but he's 17 and he's driving a BMW.
Yeah.
Like,
he's got a sweet life.
Yeah. Like they look at it as the quick way out, not looking at the long-term implications.
Yeah. I did the same thing when it came to my collegiate choice. Like, I went to Columbia because I was thinking long game. And look, if you're a football player and getting recruited by big schools like I was, it's a sacrifice. Yeah. I didn't have all the accolade and fun that you get from being at a big school. I didn't have all the attention you get. You don't get all the love from your peers. Mm-hmm. You're not on TV. You don't get the fresh sweatsuit. Right. I didn't get none of that. However, I was playing a long game. So same thing with the gang culture and everything. It was never enticing, because I was like, even if you got a 5.0 or a Nissan truck, all the shit that they were all dying over, I was like, They change those models every year, bro. They look, there was a day where a 560 SEC was the best car ever.
Yeah, yeah.
If you see that shit right now, you're like, what the hell? But the crazy thing is, someone's died over before.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's no one cares. There was a day where Suzuki Samurais and Sidekicks were everything.
Yeah.
Stop. Like, no one cares anymore. So I kind of... I looked at it from that vantage point, like, this is always moving. Don't get caught up in the now, but the next.
And you talk about this in your book, Never Shut Up, which is unbelievable, by the way, dude. There's a handful of sports books that I've read, and, like, this is your first book?
Yeah, first book.
Crushed it, dude.
Thank you, bro.
I mean, obviously, like, you got so much to go into it, but, like, all this inner city violence stuff that you talk about, like, people, I employ people to, like, because you really go into it in depth, but, like, how. Is there an age cutoff for getting recruited? Like you said, you weren't getting when the time came. When is that time? If you were living around all that, like where people start to notice, like, and also do they see your size and be like, oh shit, he'd be a great.
Yeah.
Like, what's the roster sheet look like for a gang? I guess I'm curious. Cause I grew up in Lake Forest Park, Washington.
Is there a flank man? Is there a good wheel dude?
Yeah.
Well, you got to understand too, like this horrific side of the gang thing, like, you know, fucking suburban white boys, like, do look at that outside being like, fuck yeah, it'd be cool to be in a gang. Like, because of what you do see out there, not knowing at all about that inner workings, man. And it's and then as you do get older and start to, like, hear these stories like you're putting in your book, like, it's fucking bonkers, dude.
It's crazy.
And the fact that you even get out of it or have the wherewithal to compare, or, and I guess it does, and you do talk about, again, in the book, Never Shut Up, that, like, to be able to see it all and then step back and go, that's not what I want. It's easier said than done, don't you think?
It's definitely easier said than done. Look, I was blessed. I had two parents in the home. That's a great nuclear start. A lot of kids in the hood don't have that, so they're already out of balance. They don't get, you know, one parent who is talking and understanding, another parent being a disciplinarian and playing off each other. They don't get both the masculine and feminine side from whatever that can come from.
Yeah.
They just don't get the balance. So they hear it one way. And then what happens for most gangsters that I ever met, they felt that the home didn't give them enough love, even if it did. Some of them just felt like there were issues at home. Maybe the parent had to work too much, wasn't attending to their needs and things that they desired. So they look for love and family unit and that bond outside the home.
Right.
I always tell people, someone's going to raise your kids. It better be you. If not, the streets will. Quick.
Fuck.
And as soon as you step out the house.
Really good advice.
The streets are like, oh, mama didn't listen? Daddy didn't take care of that? Oh, you didn't get this? Come here. And then the big brothers, the uncles, they start to form. And next thing you know, that's the gang. And then that's nothing but just brothers from another to you. And then next thing you know, you got to just go down dark paths to show your loyalty, this false loyalty to me. But, like, we're all down.
Right.
Really, we're powerless. The reason why you're gangbanging and shooting everybody in your five-block radius is because you can't do shit in your own mind greater than that. So what you start to do is you bring the world closer to you. You don't think about Rosecrans, where I grew up off of.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
It's the same street that is in Manhattan Beach. Yep. On the damn Crayon. That is the same Rosecrans where people have gotten killed in Compton left and right since the first day of life. So it's crazy that if you just can expand your mind beyond your borders, you will learn these things. But a lot of kids, man, look, it's real out there. It was life or death. Real colors. I couldn't wear red. I couldn't wear certain colors, logos, symbols, teams. I couldn't wear.
Wait, why? Because the gangs.
Oh, man. Everything was a code. Everything was a code. Your fingers this way is peace. Your fingers this way is 60s. Your fingers this way is Hoover. And literally, I've seen people get fucked up because they moved their thumb in the wrong place. Peace is 60s and Hoover is all the same two finger spread. It's
so you
craziness.
Can try to be showing like your boy, like, yeah, I gave a girl the shocker. And he's like, don't do that one. It's two fingers and one pinky, not two pinkies, one finger.
Right. I'm talking 80s gangbanging.
Oh, okay.
It evolved. It got sensationalized. It converted. It got a little diluted. People still were losing their life. But yeah. It wasn't as strict. There was a day where you couldn't Crip walk unless you were a Crip from that hood. Then that changed into like you could be B2K and just be in a video and do the Crip walk. Like, you know what I mean?
I remember going to school dances in Orange County and I could Crip walk not knowing what it meant.
Right.
I just know that every time I did it, everyone started cheering and going, "Holy shit, little guy's Crip walking."
Yeah, like, exactly. So
that's all I know.
Flipped.
I had
everything
no
flipped.
Clue.
Yeah, man. So
sports are such and that is how consistent do you see that now with people like that? I mean, like Marshawn Lynch talks about that a lot, right? Like how sports kind of saved him and his community. Like, is it more and more? Like, what are the stats as far as like people like yourself that have been, right? Like having that as an outlet to go, all right, and also something to focus on. Like, I even know just for me, like growing up, sports was something to, and I didn't grow up around even close to that type of trouble, but like still the kids that are like not doing school and doing drugs and all that shit, and like doing sports made me not have that be an option, you know, because I just go, I love this, and I know if I don't commit to it, then or if I fall into that stuff, I'm not going to get to do this.
Yes, I mean, sports is certainly a savior. One, just because idle time is the devil's workshop. Like that's where he gets his work done. Whatever you think of that negative energy and element in this world, whatever you call that, let a 9-year-old just have from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. to be in front of the house in some neighborhood. It's not going to work out well for that kid. I don't give a damn where he is. Yeah, you know, that's just too much, let alone the hood. So it's a savior in many ways. It's a savior mentally because now you're starting to find out who you are. Identity, discipline. You start to realize work ethic. You start to do things that are real attributes in the real world beyond sports.
Discipline is huge because I think a lot of kids, if they're buried into an iPad playing Fortnite, they don't know how to take criticism. They don't know how to take criticism from a coach. A coach that can say, "Hey, don't do this. You're fucking up. You're letting your teammates down."
I think that
stuff you really need growing up, whether it be in football or any sport, any team sport where you know that there's something out there that's bigger than yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you said it that way. Not only team sports lets you understand quickly that you can't judge a book by its cover.
Sure.
You can be big on the bus and little on the field. Like, you know, like there's a guy's, and then you hit him once and like, you're like, okay, that's different. Don't let the paint job fool you. Like, don't think you're going to go out there. And it's funny, we just had this conversation. There was a day where no one respected the white athlete. And there's still some signs of that. You know, Christian McCaffrey is still feeling that. He's like, I'm a white running back destroying people, and I still don't get my fair due.
Yeah.
You got to learn these things in sports quickly. You get off the bus thinking, oh, man, we're going to beat that team. Look at them. They don't even have good uniforms. Look at them. They're not even in the line straight.
Yeah.
That ball get kicked off. You're like, what just happened?
Hey, we all saw Little Giants.
There you go.
That team could make some noise.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, you learn so many lessons from sports, but I like not only do you have to play for something greater than yourself and find commonality from all these participants, but also, it's nothing better for you in life to know that you tried 100% and failed.
Yeah.
Like not one, failed. Like somebody, and then even if they beat you and they went 90% and they beat your 100, it just immediately crystallizes that work ethic is one lane, talent is another lane. And also, you got to put yourself in opportunities way every single time. You have to focus in every single moment to stay on your toes or else you will lose.
Yeah, you can't take a playoff.
You can't take a playoff, man. Yeah. This dude is better than you.
Yeah.
This dude just beat you. Oh, man, when you learn those lessons and you're young, oh, the world better look out.
Yeah.
Were you dope when you first started playing?
I was the shit.
Yeah, of course.
In football and track.
Dope.
I played football, track, and basketball all my first year.
Wow.
Okay.
Talking about the hood. Columbia. Like, the lottery tickets. And my parents were like, he can run. He can play every sport.
Exactly.
So
get him out there.
I was out there. I played basketball. First was football. Yeah. Mm. Played football. I was the second best player on our team. We had a cat named Stace Bozeman, who's a living legend. Dude was next level, but he chose basketball over football, kind of Charlie Ward style.
Yeah.
He made it pro in the NBA, but if he had played football,
wow.
game over.
Like game over. Like
fuck.
Like next level Randall Cunningham stuff. Wow. But he chose basketball. That was his thing.
I always wonder that with guys that have, like Nate Robinson too, man. When I would see him play him at UW, and then I was like, this guy is fucking cool. Like, he literally blocked a 7-footer during the basketball game, and then you know, he was crushing a football, and then he picked hoops, and I was like,
yeah, they all did.
You know,
like, it's smart. I mean, look, if you can, no one picks football. Football chooses you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Everyone chooses basketball. Like, we all like, hey, I can play basketball.
Yeah.
And the basketball player, nah, we ain't choosing you.
Yeah. So, well, now you even look at who's the kid from Oklahoma, Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray.
He's choosing football, it looks like,
over
a pro baseball. And everyone's looking at him like, what? No.
Right.
Get the guaranteed money. Get the big contracts.
It's weird. It changed. Like, there was a day in the 80s when I first started playing sports. So you're looking at this. Basketball and baseball clearly made more money than football. I mean, football players were like having off-season jobs.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And now, per dollar per season, even though it's not guaranteed, they're all in the same world.
Yeah.
The difference is, in baseball, it takes you like 7 years to get your money. Like, if you're big contract. NBA, you get the rookie extension, so you can get a little money, and then you get your big contract.
Yeah, yeah.
Football, dudes make money from day one, even though there's a rookie wage scale. You could be Lamar Jackson and make $8 million a year, and you're the 32nd pick in the first round. Yeah. So Kyler Murray's making a short-term smart decision. Now, because it's not guaranteed contracts, except Kirk Cousins, you got to make sure
change that game. Yeah,
you got to stay at that level, but no one wants to play 162 games and travel to Milwaukee and ride
the bus and doing the minors.
Will they ever cut the baseball schedule? It's just always – I mean, you see, like, every year the stadiums, like, at some month-to-month span look like fucking Hanson concerts. You know, like, where you're just like, people are like, they're still – oh, the game's it's happening. I guess I'll go, but I got these tickets from a friend. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, baseball is just too long, and then no one – like, I know a lot of baseball players, and you just talk to them, and they're like, dude.
It's a grind,
It's just a grind. Like, they're bored there. Like, in the game, in-game experience, they're bored.
Why do you think my boy Griffey fell asleep? I mean, that fucking sucks. And guess what? He deserved a nap after everything, after he saved baseball in our city.
Yeah.
And everyone would try to come down on him, and the timing was just so bad. Obviously, he was, like, about to retire, and then he, like, just bailed right after that. But, like,
baseball knows it, too. It's the only sport. Think about it. They know it's boring. In the seventh inning, they're like, hey, everybody, get up. Wake up. Come on, y'all. All right, let's sing together. Wake up.
The song should be called Wake the Fuck Up. There's two more innings left.
Exactly. Dude. What other sport ever thinks about, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Where's everybody? What is everybody doing? No one is paying attention.
Dude, that is so funny.
That's baseball.
That's just how it is. And, like, 162 games, and they can't shorten the season because baseball, more than the other sport, is statistics. It's all about the holy records and the Ironmans and the how many home runs did you hit in a year, batting averages, and WAR, and all that crap. Yeah. And now it's like, well, if we shorten it to 120 games, then it's not going to be authentic. It's like, who gives a fuck?
Well, the economic model is so regional and localized, and their individual networks per teams.
Right.
The teams that are blessed to have it, they can't give up that product. They can't give up that
money.
That's the money. Those hits, put them out there. We don't care if only 12 people are watching.
Yeah, that's why they want to do that volume. That's why they want to stretch the NFL season to 20 games or whatever the hell. So they can
stretch
make
it to 50.
Money.
Let's fucking go. Like 50 games, two a week.
Woo, you imagine
that, dude. Oh,
anything to get Tebow back in football. Anything to get Tebow back. Man, they did that boy wrong.
What is the true mental toughness? And again, you talk about this and Never Shut Up, which you can get Amazon, Google Play, Barnes & Noble. What's your favorite spot to tell people to get it at? Is there one?
All those, audible.com.
Yeah.
My website, shit, I should say that first.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Go to MarcellusWiley.com and you'll see me.
Did you do your own Audible book?
Yes.
Oh, I did. There you go.
Yo, that's the grind of my life.
Talk about that.
No, I don't. Ever again. I couldn't believe it. So I should have known something when the publisher, she hit me and she was like, so are you interested in doing your audiobook? And for that even to be a question, you have to know that that must be a mountain. It must be a bear because they're like, it's my book. Yeah, I want to talk about my book and say my book. And she's like, and then my agent hit me on the side. I was like, I'm going to tell you right now, it's a grizzly. It's a mother.
Yeah.
But if you do it, if you finish it, it's going to be amazing. You're going to be so happy with the product. Cool. I played football. Bill Parcells double days, triple days in college. I'm like, I'm not bleeding in a studio. I'm good.
Yeah.
She.
You've also been talking on air for a long time, and you're super, like, you know, not losing your voice, I'm sure. You're like, I got this. I'm energetic. I got enough, like.
Okay, first of all, it took 3 full days, 7 hours a session, 21 hours in there. That wasn't even that bad. The worst part was they wanted verbatim, line for line, word for word. Okay, not bad.
Yeah.
But then what happens is you read the line, and you can read it correctly, phonetically, but you didn't put the emotion or the context because it's your book. Oh, so then I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, this is my life. Oh, I got to put them... the listener in that place.
You got to make them feel like you're just talking about this once, and it's all coming out.
Yeah. So then you go back and you say, oh, I got the context. You nail the context, but then you fumble over a word. Oh, shit. Yeah. So now I'm on my third take on the first line. I'm like, ah, no.
And oh, my God.
And there's some producer that's with you that they have to be on their game the whole time to know that when you mispronounced a word, or if you did, hey, man, you should be more excited because this is what's coming up, or this is what you're building
to. You've done this before.
At some point, you just say, fuck it, get Rich Eisen to read it. Like, you just go, like, get, you know what I'm saying? Like, where you're just like, you know what, man? Like, they're not going to tell the difference.
Yeah, right.
He's got a smooth voice, too.
I would love for Rich Eisen to talk about growing up in Compton.
Oh, my God.
That would be...
That's better than... I was going to say Earl Jones, but...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, for sure, dude.
I mean, if Mufasa does my book, it's a wrap. Like, that shit's selling, bro.
Oh, my God. How does that even... well, again, I wanted to know... we're going to talk more about the book, but, like, that... Because I've heard you say it not only in the book, but on a bunch of interviews, like, the grind of football and, like... You know, every fan knows of, like, what – they think they know what players are going through. You know what I'm saying? Like, week to week, and you hear – and you watch the coaches talk about the injury reports, and, like, you know, you see any given Sunday, right? And, like, all that stuff makes fans go, like, oh, yeah, like – and then they care and they don't care because, like, just get out there and play. But I feel like we are getting a slice of what it is – like any job where you truly, if you haven't done it, it's like in our work, you know, you get like agents or even comedy club bookers that look down on you or talk about shit like they've done it, and you're like, you've never even been on stage, motherfucker.
Oh, yeah.
And that kills you, you know?
Yeah,
so
man.
Like from the same token with athletes and football players, especially, like when you hear people or at least look at them and they're like, yeah, I know what you're going through, like, or I've gotten a sense because I've read about it. Or you're just like,
hey, man, I played a lot of Madden.
Oh, look at your ass. You still?
I played a lot of Madden. I had a good franchise mode.
Yeah,
so,
you're the new Madden player. I tapped out of Madden in 95 when you couldn't run 100 yards back to throw it 100 yards. Remember, it used to be like fake shit?
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
You know
Madden.
How many Super Nintendo controllers I broke from Madden 95?
That was my last year. Yeah. And then it got real. Like, Madden 96.
Once you're calling audibles and doing like, it's like,
I'm good.
You never wanted to go back and play yourself, though?
No. You know what? One of the biggest honors I ever had was I was named a Madden legend. And so people are like, wait a minute. You didn't have a legendary career. You're right. You guys are right. However, I had legendary seasons. So I had 2 seasons that people were like, yo, these motherfuckers are killing it. Yeah. And then I, you know, injury prone, not fucking, I couldn't recover. Life, but they pick one of those seasons and they're like, he's a Madden legend.
That's,
I'm like, what the hell?
Unbelievable.
So my son is gonna think his daddy, beyond what I did for him and the family and the house and all that stuff, he's like, my daddy's a Madden legend. Shut your shit. For life.
Damn. Give me your sandwich when he's trying to trade at lunch. You know, what's your dad doing?
But you know, football, whoo.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's like, what, like, a big question, you know?
No,
like,
one
what's
gets
the week?
It.
What's the week? So you play on Sunday.
Yeah.
What's Monday? What's Tuesday?
Let me quote. Let me quote the famous Clubber Lang. I give it to you in one word: pain. That shit hurt. Football. I don't.
That shit.
Yeah. Man, no one.
That's a great follow-up book title, by the way.
That shit hurt. Right? Yeah.
No one unconditionally loves football.
Yeah.
People always, I've been saying that for 5, 10 years, however long I've been doing this on air. No one chooses football. It chooses you. And then people always shoot back at me. No. And then Ray Lewis's and Mike Singletary's. I'm like, okay, have y'all watched the Pro Bowl lately? Anybody? When it's voluntary, when it's just, hey, do you casually want to play the game of football? Ain't no pickup games of football. No one does this shit unless they got to do this, right?
To get paid.
Yes. Okay.
It's not Thanksgiving backyard where you're just kind of chucking in the red. Like,
no.
No one's
turkey bowl.
Yeah.
Stop.
No one's laying people out,
dude.
In the
last
in
turkey
the
bowl I played in was 6 years ago, and a D3 kid showed up and knocked the wind out of me in front of my mom, and I go, I'm out.
I'm
going to 24-hour fitness to play a half-court basketball game.
Yes, incentive shape behavior. So football has incentivized us at a pro level to the point where our behavior is going to be like we're all in. But what is football? It's so amazing, the positives. Dude, you're playing with these talented guys from all walks of life all over the world who you have very little in common outside of probably the sports scope. But guess what? You come together, and in that big mass of individuals, it's so great. Like, especially when I played, when it wasn't social media and it wasn't everybody had the gotcha phone and it wasn't PC. Like, dudes would be in there dog cursing each other over religion and not tripping. It wasn't like a big scandal. And then we'll go out there and ball for each other. It was like you can easily compartmentalize in those days. The game itself, like, it's amazing. Every single dude who makes it pro is a beast. But we're in a world where we can't do that. We only could talk about greatness and everyone else sucks. Right. I get media. But every single dude is special. I mean, when you get to the NFL level.
The NFL, they made it.
They made it. And I used to just sit there when I'm drafted second round and I'm in Buffalo in 97. I'm looking at my teammates and it's Bruce Smith. It's Andre Reed. It's Thurman Thomas. And then there's dudes who are undrafted. And I'm like, he went to A&M. He went to Florida State. Beast.
Yeah.
And then they're going to cut some of us. And then we're still here. And I know I'm good. And I know he's good. But what's going to make me better than him?
Right.
And then you realize we're all big. We're all fast. We're all strong. I have to dive in here and dive up here to beat him out there. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. And then even if you beat him that one play, he ain't no punk.
Yeah. Right. He's going to come back.
Play two. You got to go do it again. Oh, you got to climb the mountain like 70 times, and that's just a normal day.
How do you even get yourself – that's why when everybody was giving Sherman so much shit after the NFC Championship game when he was, you know, going off on Crabtree. Uh-huh. And then he said afterwards, which by the way, I initially knew in that moment. I'm like, oh, I feel like there's so many more things he could have said right there because he's so jacked up, dude.
Yes.
And then he said afterwards, I remember, and I'll never forget this, he's like, do you even realize what we have to do to ourselves to get ourselves fired up to go out there to kill, to fucking, to battle? Like, even that mentality. So then, like, and then you make a play like that and the stakes, and then a mic is shoved in your face right after.
Preach.
If I did all that, I would, dude, the amount of F-bombs I would be dropping, like, I mean, I can't even believe that he was so articulate and not, and just an athlete. Like, and Andrew's just like, what are you fucking talking about? And I'm like, dude, this is like so tame for what should really be said.
Yeah,
and we
man.
Should be celebrating the true, like, and he still got his true emotions through, but it was like.
Yeah.
People don't understand the emotional content that it takes to get to that place. People don't understand that you got to go to a psychotic place in your head. All that music before the game, all that jumping around, all that slapping each other in the face is to leave the planet Earth and to go somewhere else for 3 hours. And then we don't give enough credit to the guys who can compartmentalize, turn that switch back off, and be articulate after the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in the moment, you basically went into a jungle with a mic, went to the lion's den, and said, "What's going on? Guess what's coming out of there? Roar!"
Yeah.
And you're not ready. And it's it's amazing. We want to turn down the volume of the roar. Watch where you step in. It wasn't Aaron Andrews necessarily.
No.
It's
no.
just, look. Don't go there unless you want to go here.
Yeah.
And they didn't want
to
go there.
And it's just so amazing to me that sometimes the media gets mad at players for giving the stereotypical, got to take it one game at a time. And then you understand the reason why the players give those answers is because they can't say what they're actually thinking.
Yeah.
So they have to have those answers stored up. So where it's just like, I take it one game at a time. I really respect the opponent. Yeah. They're going to do it. Like, you have those that you can just call up and you know those aren't going to be controversial answers.
Yeah, yeah. Pull string, Russell Wilson. Here we go. Pull string, Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, I love him, but he got to do that.
I know.
Because he is too big a brand to be out there saying, yo, I saw the corner in film this week. He sucked. So I'm about to go smoke him, and I had to hit him on that dig route every time I saw him because he can't cover it.
Yeah.
That's the new network we need. Yeah, I mean, who wants to see that? Nobody. Everyone, but
everyone wants to see it. Hell, we saw it when damn Snoop Dogg did the commentary for the Kings game. Was that not the best thing ever?
That was.
Hey, look at him though. Oh, cuz he tripping.
I was like, man, that is hockey at its best.
Can we get Snoop or some other people to start announcing hockey and maybe like then they won't be the fourth sport?
I got something up my sleeve. I'm gonna have to take that item and make it come to life.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Football is just a beast, man. And it's funny, I always clown with basketball players. Football players always has this little, we had this jealousy for basketball players.
For real?
Think about it. In high school, they got chosen. We chose what they are doing, which is playing basketball. So now we're stuck. The athletic pyramid, basketball's at the top. Then you get down to football next. And then if you can't do football, you start saying, oh, shit, can I do track or something? Then if you can't do all of them, UFC it. You know, fuck it. Like, whoop somebody at boxing. You can't do nothing else, bro. Yeah. We get it. So it's funny. Basketball players walk around empty backpacks and flip-flops and socks. We know how it is. Walking in class, they 6'11".
Oh, yeah.
Girls looking at them. We looking at them. Look at the girls. We like, course. Oh, we're lost. I know. And then they go to practice. They're wearing tank tops. Everybody can see them. They get touched. Foul. Free throw.
Right.
We get touched. They're like, second down, motherfucker. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Do it again.
Like, do it again. And so football, we have this jealousy for them. But think about their game day versus ours. We have a curfew. Yeah. And it ain't just to keep us out the streets. It's to make sure that you understand what you about to do tomorrow, bro. Yeah. I need you to get 8 hours on that. Don't run the streets and lose that. Basketball players, no curfew. Make shoot around the next day. Then they wake up, they go to shoot around sometimes, and then they take a nap. And then they take a nap.
Dude, play some 2K. Yeah,
play some 2K.
I mean,
and then they go to the mall on game day.
Yeah,
football players, we wake up, we got meetings, we got the little buffet breakfast, then we hear the marching orders. We got hell to pay, injections, smelling salts, psychotic behavior, and we go out there. And every time you step on the field, you know you won't be healthier when you leave it. You can't.
Damn.
This finger's going to get dislocated. That one's going to bleed. This is going to get jammed. You're getting a stinger. And that's not even something to complain about. Go to your coach talking about my finger dislocated. He'd be like, what? No, it's not. Get your ass back in there.
Yo, my high school basketball coach did that to me once mid-game. That's insane. And that is there. I'm surprised that people aren't getting like truly fucked up every play. But maybe they are, and it's just like you said, you have to suck it up. Unless it is a true snap. Like when I was at the Cardinals Hawks game when Earl broke his leg for the third time, which was the worst. And it's like, unless it's that where you truly can't get up, you got to get up. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. One, they get you young. There's something to just being a youngster in anything, that youthful energy, you know. How they say, you know, youth is wasted on the young. A lot of, I don't know any better. You just are mesmerized. You're in the zone. Two, you're more pliable. I mean, I have a 3-year-old son. This sucker could turn into an egg roll. And then, like, he loves to race me. Like, anything we do around the house, he wants to race. He's competitive as hell.
Dope, right?
I'm loving
you that. Love that, right?
Yeah. Little track star.
How can you
here
not,
we go.
Dude,
get that fire going.
Get that fire going. Yeah. But I need time to warm up the race now. Like, I'm laying on my back, and he's like, come on, daddy. And I'm like, all right, this egg roll pops up ready to go. I'm like, bro, even if it's only 10 yards, I still need.
Yeah, got to stretch.
I got to stretch. But when you're young, you can do those things, man. And then the craziest part, there's a mob mentality. Mm-hmm. Like when you see in the stands, when you see five guys fighting and you see the Yellow Jackets coming, it's just because he came five deep. It's because if he was by himself, he ain't fighting nobody because he ain't even getting into that situation. So when you roll up on the field with 53 dudes, all of us, and we all wearing the same colors, we in that zone. So mob mentality meets your young, meets that adrenaline, and I can make 80,000 people scream for me if I do one thing right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's just all going to ignite right moment.
That's why when like I hear some sports commentators being like, man, I hate these players that go around the end, they do their job and sack the quarterback, and then they got to dance. I'm like, yes! I completely, yes!
Yes!
Are you kidding me? You just imposed your will on an elite athlete, and then you sack the quarterback after getting in the mental state that you have to get in to even perform that?
Say it.
Dance! Like, you know, like, enjoy it!
Hell yeah.
You know
what I mean? I mean, literally go all Paula Abdul out in that moment.
Yes.
Like, you know what's crazy?
Dude, you gotta celebrate those big things. The first time I did, go ahead, Paula Abdul.
No, I'm just saying, What people understand is football is a great game of skill. Yeah. It's a greater game of will. And you're moving men across a basic chessboard against their will. They don't want this to happen to you.
Yes.
And they're great at what they do.
This 300-pound guy that can bench press 400 doesn't want to move.
Right.
Move him.
Right. Like, people trip me out and then, fuck. Yeah. Yeah, the real world. I go out with somebody in the real world.
Yeah.
We go to the club and they see the bouncers. And they're like, oh, my God. Damn, dude, big. Cause Diesel. I'm like, that's one. Yeah. I had to go against five of those dudes every single play, every single day. Like, and it's crazy. Like, people don't understand the dimensions, the mental dynamics we go through. So, yeah, man, when it's time to celebrate, bro, don't hold back.
You have to. When I nail my Torah portion at my bar mitzvah, I fucking pop my fist in the air. When Brad grabbed Siri off the top shelf for the first time, he fucking did the worm.
Oh, look at that.
Fuck yeah.
Hell yeah. That you went up there. What was the cereal, though? Let me hear that.
Sugar Smacks.
Sugar Smacks? Oh, he old as hell. Giggum Smacks. They don't even sell that sugar. They don't sell that no more.
Giggum.
Do they still sell Giggum Smacks?
I don't
they
think
can't.
So.
They can't.
Now they call them whole wheat smacks or whatever the hell. But,
Does your son have a go-to cereal?
No.
You letting him eat cereal?
Cheerios right now. We keeping it simple.
Yeah, keep it simple.
It's funny. He has never had McDonald's. He's not into, like, fast food and bad food.
Great.
Like, he'll say, what do you want for dinner? He was like, chicken nuggets, broccoli, and like some fruit. Like, he doesn't want chips and stuff. So that means it's coming. Like, sooner or later, he's going to want some chips.
He's going to have it for the first time. Be like,
how hungry would you get playing? Like, I mean, I remember even just in my 2-a-days in high school and shit, like, I would come back and slam like 7 double deckers from Taco Bell and still be hungry.
Right.
Because of the workout and just that fucking, metabolism or whatever. But like, when you were playing, like, what was your meal regimen, like, pre post? And what was your, like, road snacks?
Yeah, man, you eat a ton. Yeah. Except pregame. A lot of guys were back in that. We were like, I don't want to feel heavy. Or it's weird. If you starve yourself, you heighten other awareness and senses you have. So it's crazy. Like, you know, they say the blind could hear better, you know, stuff of that nature. So if you're starving, you're kind of on edge. So I know a lot of guys, including myself, who used to dabble in, I'm not eating anything. I just want to be on edge.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. But after that game, you smoking everything. I played in the old NFL where, man, we used to drink alcohol on the plane and all kind of crazy.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, but then the cats was getting them DUIs, and it was just a bad look from the airport to the crib.
Sure.
Drag racing, cats. I did it a couple of times. Then I was like, man, I can't compete with y'all.
Because
if you ever drag race from L.A., it's not the same as a dude who's from, like, Tallahassee.
Of course.
No. Yeah. This shit means something to him.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not trying to die and race. Yeah. Like,
right.
Just race, not die, you know?
Yeah. And L.A., you got two blocks before you hit traffic. So it's like, you can't really.
Yeah.
It's like the guys that buy Lamborghinis in Los Angeles. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Oh, man.
When are you going to get to use that?
Yeah. You're looking at a guy who had a Ferrari, too. You want to know where you use it? At the red light. Because every time I'm parked like this, I just felt heat on these eyes. And I was like, yeah, what's up, girl? All right. I literally sold my Ferrari once I met my wife. Because I was like, and I told her, I said, oh, I got all I needed out of this car. Now I can't. She left the house while we were dating. And I was living in Manhattan Beach. And these three ladies were having a picnic in front of my house. It's like this park in front of the house in the Strand. It was right there.
Yeah.
So it was a great bachelor pad. But I just met my wife and I knew she was special.
Yeah.
So she's running errands one day. She leaves the garage door open. I'm closing it. And it's these three pretty girls at the beach having a picnic in front of my house. nothing major except they looked and they saw a Ferrari in the garage.
Come on.
Wait. Man. So all of a sudden. And I'm like, ah. And then I'm looking down. I can see. I'm like, that's them three girls. Now, I am happily in like with my girl at the time.
Yeah.
But I'm also Marcellus. Not so reformed yet.
Sure.
So I'm like, I'll go down. And they're like, hi, we just want to say hello to you. And
Jesus.
I'm like, wow. I mean, I'm looking at them. I'm like, well, keep talking. And then at the same time, I'm like, leave. And then they basically, I said, look. Y'all are beautiful. I get it. I'm in a relationship. She just left, and I'm pretty sure you saw that. But anyway, what's up? And they were like, can we just take a picture with you in your car? And I was like, all right, long as y'all go over there, and I can still stare at y'all. Y'all can do that.
You can look.
And then after that, I called the broker. I was like, man, enough of the Ferrari. It's going to cause more harm than good.
Wow. That's a big move.
Yeah.
I can relate. When I had my grandparents' Mercury Grand Marquis at USC parked on Fraternity Row.
Is that when y'all were puffing?
Yeah.
And the police came?
Dude, it looked like a cop car.
Yeah.
It would be parked on Fraternity Row amongst all the, you know, rich USC Escalades and BMWs, and literally this giant boat gray car driven for 2 months by Dolphin Sylvia Brown from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And every weekend people were like, whose grandparents are visiting? I'm like, no, that's just me. That's how I'm getting around. That's how I'm hitting the open mics.
See, you're a little younger than me.
Yeah.
So that would have played well. Like, I grew up in an era where if you just had a car, it could have been a Rolls Royce or it could have been a Grand Marquis. It's the same. Because you got a car. But now,
you got to step it up.
And these cats got Ubers and Limes now. It's a whole different animal now. You got to have something fresh.
Yeah. You talk about the girls just seeing a Ferrari. Like, when people talk about how players are hit up by those outside distractions, can you even imagine playing now when it's Instagram? It's Twitter. It's sliding in those DMs.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I wish I had that access. Because my friends used to clown me.
Yeah.
I was the first one on Microsoft Outlook way back when I played. I used to have these huge, massive parties, like Ballers TV show parties.
Nice.
And people were like, how does Marcellus getting everybody at his parties? Like, they did write-ups on my parties and Sports Illustrated.
No way.
Crazy stuff. Like, insane parties. Yeah. It was because I was first adopter of email blasts. I used to do email blasts. I meet you, I got your email. And then when it was time to party, I let all of them know. And everybody's like, oh, okay. So then what happens is, how do you deal with all this DMing and stuff?
Yeah.
One, it's amazing, first of all. Let's just be real. The days of going to the mall and looking over the rail and act like you buying shit for 4 hours, it's so archaic, antiquated. Yeah. It's so wasteful.
And now, like back in your day, would you have to like go to the club and then pretty much like announce that you're a football player? Like, hey, everybody.
Yeah.
I'm a football player.
Yeah, exactly.
Now.
And the helmet mentality, where it's, you don't know who I am? I'm going to show you what my watch is, my chains, how much I'm spending.
That's how you do it.
Now it's a culture where I'm going to still pop bottles for the real estate, the luxury of the having the table, but I'm actually playing it cool because I know y'all.
It's going to come to me.
It's coming. All I got to do is leave here and then watch that little right corner. Bloop, 1, 2, 3, 4. DM, baby.
Dude, I drunkenly DM'd Katy Perry to invite her to a show once just because I could.
Because you could.
You know?
Why not?
And did she respond? Fuck no.
No.
Did she even look at it? Definitely not. But like, just the fact that it was like there. I mean, how do you... I mean, you guys, by the way, speak for yourself, killer.
Yes.
You're crushing it. I will say this, and I know Brad will agree. Like, I have a Mount Rushmore of people who talk sports on TV, and it's you, Beadle, Stu Scott, Rich Eisen, and Kenny Mayne.
Dang.
Yeah, dude.
Ooh.
You crush, dude.
Thank you, bro.
I mean, on Nation, dude, and I, you know, I got to do it once with you. And I mean, you're just so, there's a combo, and it's almost like being on stage, man, like being likable, being articulate, having something to say, like, and also like the way you can like give and take and listen, like that's huge in any, I mean, in this and like what you're doing on TV, but like you've mastered it, dude.
Man.
And I don't know how you, when you feel like it all clicked for you, but.
Yeah, man. I mean, shoot, you asked me in 5 years, I'll probably say then, and right now I'm like, not yet.
Yeah. But you feel in a good spot now, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
Where like something comes in, something happens in the news to where you immediately go, I have an opinion about it and I know how to express that and toe the line with also taking into effect, you know, how it might be perceived. Or do you even do that? And you just go, no, this is what I'm going to say about it.
Yeah, you know, I think my formula, like everyone's formula, it really starts with your voice, but you got to find it. It's in there. Mm. It gets socialized a lot. It gets told what to say. Imagine your voice is being told what to say.
Oh, yeah.
And your voice is like, what? Like, what world are we living in? So when I first started, I was raised in a very, very honest home. Like, we pull no punches and we're not taking care of you. If you suck, you suck. If you're great, you're great. And even if you're great, we're not sucking you up. My mom was like, you're great. Move on. It wasn't like, you're great. Bow down.
Yeah.
You know? And when you were bad, you need to stop doing it. My dad called me. I'm 8 years old. I told you about my basketball history, right?
Yeah.
I played 1 year. I scored 5 points. We had like 20 games. We won a championship.
Yeah.
But I scored 5 points the entire season, including four in one game. So I really peaked in that one game. I don't know who we played, but I whooped their ass. And
double ice cream that day.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Yeah.
And my dad is like, whew. So at the end of the year, we win our championship. Yep. I barely played, if anything.
Yeah.
And my dad's like, so what do you think of basketball? And I was like, Dad, I don't think I want to play. I immediately felt that it wasn't for me. I wasn't good at it. I didn't even want to try and work at it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My dad was like, good, you finished your commitment, respect. And he was like, good, because I didn't want to take you to practice anymore, Zippo.
You are lucky that your nickname is That Dude and not Zippo. That would have shit.
And that's my dad. And then when he would take me to practice football, he'd give me the dope. He's like, yeah, you're doing well. And
yeah.
You know, it's just like, that's why I was good. Raised to that. So my voice has always been about honesty.
Yeah.
Make your opinions fact-based, which is like, I don't just let my opinions be feeling-based, because I can feel a lot of different ways a lot of different times.
Sure.
It's like, I get numbers, I get facts, I get real circumstances, and then I just opine from there. But I think just my honesty, and that I know I don't know it all, you know? So
yeah.
I just approach it from that, and same I think time, most people got to find that voice.
Yeah, you're coming from a player's perspective, but at the same time, I know a lot of players, I won't mention names, that still I don't know if they're losing touch. I don't know if they like to toe a company line. I don't know if they're not trying to make any waves, but they're just saying the things that you need to say.
I will.
Drew Brees. What is your true stance? What is your true stance?
Yeah, really I get it. You have that career post NFL, and you want to hold on to it. But I do appreciate your honesty.
Yeah,
because you are out there saying some things that you can tell that you'll see the looks on people's faces next to you going, Marcellus.
Yeah, one of the greatest compliments I got from a player was, man, I've never seen a guy criticize someone and you actually still like them.
Yeah.
And I've criticized players and then party with them. Like, dudes come up to me left and right. They be like, you told the truth, because we're all unique with our signature. We're all unique with our fingerprint. We're all unique in our voice. But if you don't hone that and express that, we all know when you're just a carbon copy, you're phony, you're a duplicate. And I'm never going to be that. Now, you may not agree with what I'm saying, and kudos to you. Like, prove me wrong or just have that discussion. But
that's why I feel like some people hate guys like Cowherd because he has opinions. And it's like, well, good.
Yes.
He has an opinion.
Thank you.
Great.
Yes.
You can disagree with it. You can agree with it. You can do whatever you want with it. But at least it's not, well, they got to establish the run game and they got to get to the quarterback. The way you stop Tom Brady is you got to go punch him in the mouth. And
channel change.
Yeah.
Channel change.
It's the same shit every time.
But I also love that you're not like clickbait. You know, like Stephen A, like, that's the first example that comes to mind. But sometimes I'm just like, dude, you're screaming just to scream, and like you said, like you're literally saying what I feel like I've said, but you're just saying it like more angry. Like,
yeah. Well, there's, look, I give Stephen A this.
Oh, he's also brilliant at, like, dude, come on, creating a larger than life character, which we also want as fans. You know what I'm saying?
No, I'm going to say this because I know where Stephen A is now, and everyone's kind of like, oh, man, come on, you yelling over that.
Yeah.
Like, stop yelling.
Yes.
I remember the first time I met Stephen A. I don't even know if he remembers. I was playing for the Chargers. It's early 2000s and the best damn sports show up here at Fox.
Fuck yeah,
so since I'm playing for the San Diego, closest team to L.A., I'm on that show. Like, it felt like weekly, like all
that's
the time.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so I'm
that's the next move, by the way, man. You bring that back.
Yeah.
Host that shit. Bring Brad and I. We'll co-host it with you.
Hell yeah, that was a great show, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable.
Done.
So I'm doing that, and I remember meeting Stephen A. in the dressing room, and he was just a mild-mannered reporter from Philly, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, nice meeting you. He's like, oh, nice meeting you. And nothing, think nothing of it. We get on the air, and and I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, that guy is, and this is not Stephen A. Smith at the time to the world.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like, he's on this show, and he's with me, and I'm like, oh, he is going. And you know what I took from it? I was like, oh, this is a game. Like, this is for real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he turned it on. Like, when I walk into the stadium, you know how it is, and the cameras are showing you, has he got on Gucci today?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm chilling. When I get out that locker room, we're on that field. Rawr!
Yeah, you're a beast.
And I was like, I remember that moment vividly. So I can't
now
tell that person to turn that off when they got them 19 All-Pros and big contracts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's how he – Ray Lewis – was going to do that dance no matter if it was a preseason game or the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead, brother.
So when you look at a guy like what's going on with, like, let's say the Pittsburgh Steelers with the first the Le'Veon Bell situation and now the Antonio Brown situation.
Mm. Do you guys get excited to talk about that stuff, or is it like...
Yeah. I mean,
when there's something that is a big, juicy story, like...
As long as it has, like, more sociological elements. Yeah. I love, like you said, juicy. Like, if we're bringing real life into sports, perfect for me. When it's just sports, third and goal, like, corny shit, like, I don't care. I hate when we do, which team's going to win? I'm like...
Oh, boy.
What? Like, I don't know. One, I have not talked to every player. If I did, they don't know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like we're just having a song and dance. I like it when it's a real life element built in the story.
So when you when you were playing, were there guys like an Antonio Brown or Terrell Earl Owens Thomas? Or a Odell Beckham where they would come to the locker room and you're like, oh, this motherfucker.
On my team. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I played against all those guys, T.O. and them boys. Woo. On my team, Buffalo, no. You knew that Bruce Smith was like a big deal.
Yeah.
You knew Thurman Thomas. You knew they were big deals, but they were cool. In part because they're in Buffalo. Like, Buffalo puts you in a place where...
We've been there.
Yeah, Buffalo is like, you're a Buffalo Bill, football's won, but you're not getting the extras that, like, when I was a Dallas Cowboy, you got all the extras.
Extra,
all the sauce that comes from being an NFL player to the extreme.
Yeah.
So I think Buffalo is more on the lower end in terms of all the extras.
Right.
And Dallas gets you get too many and too much of it. So on my team, I'm trying to think through the team. Who was the divas? I played with Junior Seau, Drew Brees, LTs. Like, I'm playing with Walter Payton, men of the year. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
dude,
I'm not playing with, like, bums. Dallas, Keyshawn. Keyshawn's one.
Yeah.
That's my boy, but I knew him from Hello, so I knew he was a hard to deal with.
Is it always the wide receivers?
If you had to blindly guess, yes. But there's some running backs, too. Le'Veon Bell. There's some other guys like that. But no other divas, really.
Can a guy like that really break up a locker room?
We had the greatest controversy, civil war, I think, in NFL history in terms of breaking up a locker room. When it was Rob Johnson versus Doug Flutie. They on the cover, I think, of SI, like, civil war.
Oh, he was on the cover of Highlights. He was so popular. Remember that in the dentist's office? Yeah.
Yes,
anyway, there was like, how many Doug Flutie heads can you find in this garden? Anyway,
man, for real. Yeah. So break up a locker room, I don't see it.
It's a rarity now, to have a true, like, people just go, it's a business, so people just go.
Yeah, we all get it. Like, it's funny how scandal, for anybody, but even in the sports world, is always bigger on the outside than it is in your world. Think about it. When people hate me, or it happens on Twitter, somebody says something crazy. If I respond, oh, big fan. Okay, I see a dude, it's happened twice, I've seen a dude in public that I recognize that talk shit on Twitter or something. And he's like, oh, can we take a picture? Like, everything in your face is not scandal, even when you're going through it. Yeah. Because you got to remember, people still cheer for you. People still love you. People still care about you. So when you're going through hell, it's bigger out there than it is in there.
Right.
So I don't see it really tearing apart to me in locker room.
So you think that the media just kind of blows it up because they have that 24-hour news cycle. They want that story to talk about. And maybe guys are annoyed at a certain player, but not like, I can't do this.
Yeah, you know, I don't go too far with the media does things. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've worked so many different places that this is what happens. I'm at ESPN. We do it on one show. I'm at ESPN. I have another show I'm doing. Okay, we do it there. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm at Fox. Oh, they're going to do it. Oh, you go look at TNT. They're going to... And then it looks like everyone's in cahoots to blow some shit up. But in reality... No, I'm just doing my part. You're doing your part. We're all just spitting the same verse, so now it's a loud chorus. But it's all individuals kind of collectively sharing something. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I don't think there's a collective malintent.
Okay.
They just stories get big because LeBron sneezes, the world's going to say, bless you. You know what I mean? Like the world. Like, everybody's going to say, I have to say bless you. But if everyone says bless you at the same time, whoa.
Yeah.
It's really... just you. Go to a game. You ever go to a game
and
you're like, when you're on the field, you hear only this. This is amazing. Or boo.
Yeah.
But when you're in the stands, you hear motherfucker. Hey, man, give me that. Hey, popcorn. And it's crazy up there. And I love going to the games and sitting in the stands.
You do, yeah.
Because right. I'm like, oh man, that's they where, are MFing people.
That's where the true creatures of the world come out, man.
This, right, this but on is the field, happening.
It's can you just, hear that shit on the field?
I mean, the guys with the good seats, yeah. like here or there,
yeah.
you know. But reality, it usually is filtered to just or boo.
Yeah.
But then you get up there, you get all the details.
What did you think about Earl Thomas and my Hawks when all that was going down? Because I feel like that was a pretty like that was a real specific. Way that that was all going down where it was like him and Pete came to this understanding where he was like, I'm going to sit out practice, but then I think he had four picks in the first three games. And Pete obviously like just playing into his whole like let everybody be themselves and that is and obviously the whole season like went way better than we thought, so that's a whole thing in itself. But but ultimately, and then when he flicks off the set, like how did you as a player like understanding, because a lot of players came to his side and were and even I was like, dude, get your money, even though we paid you twice, and like I get that they didn't want to pay him more, but like also maybe lock him down because he is great, but then they are turning it over. Like,
yeah, I'm all over the place with that in part because I respect a player, what he wants to do. Of course. If he wants to take the chance and roll the dice, I'm with you. If you want to be the guy who's like, nah, man, I'm sitting out, I'm with you as well. I love Pete Carroll for this. He gives his players emotional latitude. Like, you can be quiet as hell on that team, and he still respects you. You could be corny as hell, and he respects you. You could be loud as hell, and he still respects you. Like, they've had the spectrum. They've had Earl Thomas to Russell Wilson to Richard Sherman.
To beast mode.
And to beast mode. Like,
It doesn't get any more on one team. Like, are you kidding me?
And he let it all roll. He let it all happen. So the Earl Thomas situation is sad because it's a damning reminder of how fickle the game of football is. Yeah. And
1 second.
It really touched me because I didn't have like catastrophic injuries that was like that moment. It accumulated. I had injuries, but it robs you. And that's what I don't like about the game of football, how fickle it was. You could be in love. And there were days, weeks, months, years, six pack, perfect shape, every workout. Oh, I'm bench pressing 500, squatting 700. And, you got a rehab for 9 months. See you next year. Oh, and then you're like, to climb that hill again? And no one feels sorry for you, and you don't feel sorry for yourself because you're going to climb it. But that's what I hated about football. It was so fickle. Whereas other sports, you have more guarantees in terms of contract.
Yeah.
And more guarantees in terms of injury. Like, very few guys get the same level of injury outside of the game of football as they do in it.
So your son comes to you and says he wants to play football.
How old is he?
7.
52.
No. Oh. Nah. No, not 7, at 7. No. Not at 10.
No way.
Not at 13, 14. If he's a high school freshman and he sits down and he's like, "Dad, I want the pure dope. Good, bad, and ugly about football." And I'm going to tell him all that, and then I want to hear from him his level of commitment and what's his goal with it. If he's doing it for recreational purposes or just to be on a team or a hobby, no. You ain't playing football just to be chilling and you're a senior and you're just like, that was fun. Fuck that. I'm going to overstep my bounds and say, you don't want two dislocated fingers to just go into your freshman year of college saying, hey, football was fun. Football has to be fun. You have to have a deeper, greater goal. If he has that, even if he doesn't achieve it, I don't care about that. It's just you got to be committed to this game because it's gonna get a pound of flesh out of you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Even in high school, you're sitting in high school, and I remember times I'd be sitting in high school talking to a girl like, She's like, "Can I see your paper when you're done?" Yeah, sure. She's like, "Ugh." I'm like, "What's wrong with you?" "Oh, you bleeding." I'm like, "Oh, damn." Elbow leaking on the table. I don't want my son going through that, and he's just doing it so he could be cute to three cheerleaders. Nah, if you find a different way up the mountain, if that's not for you and you're not trying to hit the summit.
Draft day, we just tell us real quick like what that was like in comparison to like other great highlights in your life. Mm. Like that.
Draft day.
Is it as big as everyone makes it out to be?
No, everyone makes it more than it is.
Okay.
Unless you're the number one overall pick, like Keyshawn and them shits, like before they even the broadcast, they even did the credits intros. I'm picked. No. It's a long day. It's a long process full of anxiety. And your world doesn't change because you don't get paid that day. Your world doesn't change because they don't direct deposit. You don't even have a contract.
Yeah.
But the world changes around you. all your friends, wow. family, homies. I went to the mall. I was wearing, I had a track suit that I was wearing to this party, a draft party, and I forgot my headband. So I went in the morning, got my suit, I'm ready, and the guy who sold it to me was like, oh, I heard today you're getting drafted. Good luck. Yeah. Like, good luck. And I'm like, all right. I came back after I got drafted looking for the headband that I forgot. He's like, I heard you got drafted. Oh, my God. Can you just take these pictures? Everybody in the store bum rushed me. And then the craziest part about that was how perceptions of you change.
Yeah.
4 hours ago, whatever it was, I was here and y'all ain't tripping. And right. now I'm somebody to you. So the only thing about draft day is a little interesting is how the world changes immediately and instantly.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Did you get the people hitting you up immediately trying to get into the side of that inner circle, trying to get money, trying to get hookups, investments, things like that?
Yeah. All day. You know, it's easy.
You good for five more, by the way?
Yeah, and then I gotta go to the movies. My wife about to.
Oh, snap. What are you guys gonna hit?
Glass? Yeah, Glass. Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
You seen it?
No, not yet, but it's on the list. That was gonna be one of my questions is how does Marcellus Wiley chill?
Yeah.
What's your, like, you got guilty pleasure shows?
Yes.
You and your wife, yeah, like.
Yes.
You watch Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club yet?
No, I haven't heard of that.
Wow.
It's good?
After you watch the Fire documentary, which you probably watched.
The Fire
documentary.
About the Fire Fest.
Fest, Ja Rule, and this rich white kid.
Oh, yeah, that's
what
it's called? Oh, yeah, yeah, I got to see
put that.
That
in your queue.
Oh, yeah, that's on my queue.
Yeah. I just watched the Ted Bundy shit, which is bonkers. But,
Like,
what do you, when you guys are, what are your shows for you and then you and the wife?
She just fell in love with the Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Handmaid's Tale.
Like, they got two episodes out of me, and I was like, I'm good. Yeah. I'm not big into, like, anything that's not just documentary, nonfiction, hardcore. When you start taking me into other worlds or post-apocalyptic.
Dude, Game of Thrones?
Hell no.
Fuck no.
No.
Dude, I knew
no.
we were friends
no.
when, you fucking, when I first
right.
met you.
I don't need no dragons around me. It's like, no, go down to Figueroa. There's some dragons. Go no fake world. Oh, there's dragons. No,
dude,
it ain't.
I love that no. I am. Not, I mean, no. it's...
I'm good.
I tried to watch one, and I was just like,
"Yeah, I can't do that." Lord of the Rings, all
Harry
that shit.
Harry Potter, dude.
No, none of them.
Fucking go to college, Harry.
I'm not looking for a ring
around.
And sorcerers. No,
no, dude. Yeah.
No, where are the real people at? Where Doughboy at? Thank where Kane? You know what I'm saying?
Where Doughboy?
Where Bishop at? Like, give me some. Like, yeah. Okay, I get that.
That's gonna be the name of my book. Where Doughboy at? That's
so
great.
Dope. So yeah, guilty pleasures. I guess we always try to find a series. Mm-hmm. We loved Bird Box, was that called?
Bird Box.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
I like to hydrate at home. Simple hydration, 2 or 3, some whiskey. Mm-hmm. The wife, she loves her Malibu and pineapple. She's so ghetto. And I'm like, she's from Canada. That's so bougie.
Is that a ghetto drink?
It is.
Malibu and pineapple?
Put it this way. Go to somewhere nice and say, y'all got Malibu? They're going to be like, no, boo. No, we don't. So, yeah, it's funny, man. So we just... We are all in on our kids. Once they go down, we just try to find something to watch and me sip on, and that's it.
Good, man. Well, dude, just hearing you on this podcast, you see why you're successful. You see why you're the guy that had the life after football. It seems like you were planning the life after football from the minute you got in football.
Yeah.
Man, you know what? The one thing, and I didn't notice this until like 5 years post retired.
Yeah.
That I wrote this in one of these, I guess, the game day programs.
Yeah.
That I wanted to use football to increase my volume for me to tell the world what I was and what I was going through. And it's crazy that this is a blessing. I knew that if something was going to be bigger after football, and I didn't know what it was. And my teammates used to clown me. They're like, dog, you're retiring too early. Like, I really just tapped out. And I was like, I'm done. I'm tired of getting hit. I want to save my body for my family. And they were like, man, what you going to do and make this much money and be good at and blah, blah, blah. I was like, I don't know. But I'm sure that my highlights are in front of me, not behind me. Mm-hmm. And we got into arguments. But you know what's funny? Football reminded me because I couldn't fully just show and display my talents because I kept getting hurt.
Yeah.
I was like, something that has to be out there for me that I can fully dedicate to, and it won't be as fickle as football was. So,
yeah.
whatever that means. I don't even know if I'm doing it yet, but shit.
You are, dude. Good. It feels good. And just to give you a little heads up on Speak for Yourself, you guys are going to have something to talk about in a couple weeks when Brad and I play in the NBA Celebrity All-Star Game.
Oh, my.
And they're
buckets.
Just...
They're
you thought you sucked at basketball? Get ready for this, Marcellus Wiley.
If there's a clip, hopefully that goes viral, of me here when I call timeout and put on a baby Bjorn to put Brad around my waist to play some defense... Put it up on the show if you want.
Oh, talk you know, about damn, it. You better I'll text that to me. I thought Zippo was bad. I can't wait till my daddy has to take you somewhere.
Yeah.
He's going to kill you, boy.
Oh, it's going to be great. I'm going to be running under Tracy McGrady's legs all day.
Oh, man. That's going to happen. Best. Win MVP. Kevin Hart style. Like, Kevin Hart used
that's
to win MVP.
I know, dude. That's what I'm saying. I've been in touch with the NBA about, like, you know, because we're going to shoot these promo videos with my buddy next week just to really, like, take advantage of, like, being a part of it, because it's such a, you know, we're so fired up. But,
oh, man.
But, and they're just like, you know, because I think there's, I mean, giving Dr. Oz, like, an elbow might be.
I might do that.
He'll heal himself right there. In a moment, he'll be like, that ain't do nothing.
Put some, like, avocado oil on there or something.
Shout out to Columbia, too.
Hell yeah, dude. I do. Before we wrap up, I'm going to do one more thing, but I do want to shout out Michelle Beadle, too, because had I not been on Nation and met you that time, when I accosted you in the elevator in New York randomly, that would have been a lot weirder.
Yeah, exactly.
You would have been, I mean, you're so fucking cool and personable, you probably still would have been receptive to a point, but like... That literally was like a crazy...
That was random as hell.
Right?
Yes.
Late night elevator, man, when there's two... I mean, you know, and I'm not a big like elevator small talk person.
No, me either.
As soon as I looked up and saw you, I was like, all right, like, I don't know if you remember me, but like, and I got to say something now, I can't sit in silence for 20 seconds. That's that fight or flight. So but you're cool as shit, man.
You gave me the elevator pitch. And I was like, man, I know you. Nah, don't be acting like that. What's up, boy? But you know, especially in New York, that's a city where you, right here, brother.
I know, dude. And you were doing it, man. You were looking at you were watching those buttons being like, this fucking white boy better not talk to me, man. I can see him just sizing me up.
Hell yeah, I see him. These ain't Gucci.
Can we do a quick, like a rapid fire, like just more, you know, just to get a little bit more answers from you on certain.
Oh, we got a soundtrack too.
Right. Is this Shazam? Jamie Foxx about to pop out?
You know, I actually went to Guitar Instrumentals and it says James Shannon guitar covers. This is fucking some bullshit, but it's Killing Me Softly with his song James Shannon. All right, here we go, Marcellus. Your favorite stadium to play in?
Arrowhead.
Ooh,
loudest stadium too. It was so sweet. Chiefs.
Yeah.
That stadium also hasn't been refurbished at all.
No, right? That thing is pure dope. Like straight old original cocaine.
If it ain't broke, don't
like
fix it.
Red shirts, barbecue, and cheese. Loudest place I ever played in.
For real?
Yeah, they handed out aspirin when we were playing during the game. They're like, y'all gonna need this.
No way.
Real talk. Yeah. Loudest stadium ever.
Favorite athlete to watch?
God.
Whether you played or even now, you know?
Probably all time. Usain Bolt is up there. I'm a track fanatic, so.
Okay.
Shoot, man. Quincy Watts, like, people are like, who, what? Olympians. outside of that, I love Patrick Mahomes right now.
He's entertaining.
Man crush on him, too.
Yeah, for
man,
sure.
I saw him the first game, went to the Chargers game, and they played. I came back and said, he's not next, he's now and next, and everyone laughed at me. It was week one though, so I get it. Tony Gonzalez was like, can you give him time to breathe and learn to play? All right, Tony. All right,
how do you think he's gonna be doing with that voice like the whole time? Because you know, like every time he's in an interview, he's like, Tom Brady, I really respect him.
You're gonna be having picnics outside of his house soon,
I gotta love it, right? Oh man, Patrick Mahomes,
he's a beast. And people say he's Russell Wilson 2.0, but I mean, I think he's even doing some shit that
he's
like,
his own thing. Russell Wilson never did know no look passes.
This is Mahomes 1.0, bro.
That was right.
Ain't no 2.0.
Like left-handed shit, like
he
the offhand.
Is everything. He's gonna smash everything.
You think
record.
He's gonna? Yeah, he is. Right.
Done.
Just stay healthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Done.
I guess we addressed this, but favorite food on the road.
Tacos.
Yeah.
At home and the road.
Fuck
I just had three tacos on the way here.
Fuck
what do you call it? Barbacoa or something like that?
Sure.
That rich meat. I was like, that's extra salty ground chicken where I'm from. They're talking about barbacoa. I'm like, all right, whatever.
Guilty pleasure show we did. Your drink after a great show on air or even great game. Like, how would you, if there was something you were like, man, I'm going to treat myself.
Yeah. Even if I had a bad game, bad show, still going to have that drink. It's going to be my favorite drink.
Yeah.
Tequila rolls. People are like, it's basically tequila and strawberry milk. But
wait a minute, what? I'm a tequila connoisseur. I've never heard of that shit.
Oh yeah, tequila rolls. You gotta
like
make
Nesquik strawberry
next
milk.
Next time you go to USC, go east. Stop coming west every time. Stop being scared. Tequila rolls. No, it's everywhere. It's really good. It's really good.
Done and done.
Try that.
The weirdest topic you've ever been asked to discuss on a show.
Weirdest?
Or that you guys have, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's covered because you almost had to because it was in the news so hard.
I mean, you talked Tebow before. That may have been a
man, you better stop. I love Tebow. That's my guy.
I have his jersey in my car. No bullshit.
Dude, you know how there are a few people like Muhammad Ali when he walks in the room? Yeah. Michael Jackson. I met both of those guys.
Shut up.
Like, there's energy changers. Like, I'm Michael Jordan for a lot of people. Yeah. Not necessarily me, but he's great.
Yeah.
Tell you, Tebow walk in the room, I've seen it. Tebow walked into the Super Bowl one time. It's Super Bowl, but still, Madonna was there. Everybody was like, Madonna. Tebow came. People said, bye, Madonna. Tebow. Like, Tebow
holy
is
shit.
A next level energy changer. So I just love him.
Wow. I have one question.
Yes.
Biggest trash talker you played against?
Oh, great question.
John Randall back in the day.
John Randall.
John Randall.
With the face paint.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah.
Real talk. He had the wolf tickets. And he was the wolf. Like, he was like, I'm selling y'all some of this dope that I'm about to go give you. He was amazing. I love that dude. That I would say him. He's the one.
John Randall.
Yeah.
Sport you would have played other than football?
Track, I hope, but I'm about 200 pounds over that. But nah, I'm telling you, I'm not a great athlete. As a footballer,
they could do the it. Like they did the big three on three retired player. They can do that for track.
I can do the big. I don't need the other three, the other two or three. I can do the big.
Ping pong or tennis?
Oh, what do you call it?
Table tennis.
Table tennis.
Yeah.
Oh, ping pong. Stop playing.
Pool or darts?
Damn, where were we in? Kansas, mother? I used to laugh about even Buffalo. People playing pool and darts and eating wings. I was like, this is some country shit. Like, who goes somewhere and I'm going out to play darts and eat wings? Like, that's nasty. That's nasty. Right, I'm not that small town, but pool or darts? Pool.
Yeah. Hugs or high fives? With someone you've
hugs.
Yeah.
I don't like high fives.
Yeah.
My shoulder messed up. I had surgery. Hug me.
And you mentioned your parties earlier. You still having them?
Nah. Well, look, Super Bowl party at Jalapeno Pete's. Come by.
Yeah.
It's not the same. And that's why I'm losing population. Yeah. My RSVPs are less.
You're starting to get emails from people being like, yo, you can take me off that list now.
Yeah. Yes. Wait. Still send for Microsoft Outlook?
Way back, so back in the
Hotmail
day,
Hotmail was too fancy for you. You gotta go Microsoft Outlook.
Who was, if you can say, like some of the, who was the coolest person that was coming to some of those parties that maybe came that you didn't even send an email to that roll with and did Denzel get a plus one and he brought, you know, Hallie or Barry or some shit?
I have horrible recall, as you notice when you ask me, what do you and the wife do? I don't know.
Yeah.
There are many a stars who have been to my parties.
That's dope.
God, who's the biggest? Oh, Denzel's cool. I've hung and smoked cigars with Denzel before.
Hey, all right. That wins.
Yeah, that wins. And Denzel told me he's a big fan, which is crazy because I know he doesn't bullshit. So I'm like, you're really saying this. And we just talked 3-4 hours one night, just talking all sports. He's a big sports
fan. Huge. Massive. When I first seen him going on shows, I was like, I fucking love, because you just have no idea, because he also doesn't do a ton of press, but when he would go on
these
shows,
And then I saw him out. So then it's that weird thing, you know, your second date.
Yeah.
You know, it's how cool was the first date?
Yeah.
So I'm like, wait. So I'm like walking by and I'm like, okay, everyone wants to speak to me. Hi, y'all, but I want to see if Denzel wants to speak to me again.
Yeah.
Like, I would have went up to him like, hey, Denzel, remember me?
Yeah.
We had cigars. Yeah. But he was just like, Marcellus, what's up? I'm like,
I'm two
for two with Denzel, so that's my dog.
There you go.
Yeah.
What, dude, smoking cigars with Denzel is the coolest shit ever.
And I don't even like cigars like that, but I was like,
Dude, sometimes you got to.
How you get into this club?
Oh, yeah.
Do it. Hey, Snoop Dogg comes in and says, hey, you want some weed? The answer is yes.
It is legal.
Yeah.
It is.
So you're fine.
Dude, I got off stage at the Improv one night, and Paul McCartney was there, and he tapped me, and he goes, Sir Paul, and sits down, and he was like, oh, great day. He's like, you want to have a drink? And I was like, yeah, what are we? I was like, yeah, I'll drink anything. I'll do anything to you. Like, what's going on? I'm very vulnerable right now, you know?
Yeah.
And he goes, I go, what are we drinking? He goes, let's get margaritas. I'm not a margarita guy. And I was like, of course. I was like, he literally could have said, let's drink our own piss. I would have been like, fuck yeah, dude. You're a Beatle. Like, I'm in your world right now.
Let's do it. Yeah. I saw how much your divorce was. Yeah. Okay. Anything to get in, Paul. Anything.
Right, dude, thanks for making time.
I
hope you had a good time.
Man.
This was unbelievable.
This was amazing.
Dude.
Man.
And
once again, the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Never Shut Up. Go get it. You're fucking, dude, probably the first of many books. Yeah. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I want to do a child version now of like...
You do, right?
Yeah, something inspirational for the kids. There's a little profane language in there. I kept it 100. Mm-hmm. I want to do something to inspire the kids out there, the fork in the road kids, to do better in their choices in their life. So somehow make it for the younger generation to get them pumped up.
Just call it Don't Hang Out with Doughboy.
Don't do what Doughboy did.
Perfect.
Oh, wait, real quick. Super Bowl pick.
Oh, shit.
You don't have to get into it. But
I say Belichick and the Patriots.
God
damn. The wrinkle. He's going to throw a wrinkle and you'll be like, is that one D lineman and nine linebackers?
Every time
you're just not going to know what the hell to do with it.
Every time you think they're dead, mm-hmm. they come back.
Yep, that's it.
They're like the Air Bud franchise. Right? You're like, they can't do another one. Badminton?
Yeah. Here we go. They're going to give me divorce. I got to go. My wife's like, where's this movie?
Thanks, man.
Oh, appreciate it. So, that's the show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.